Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the Conspiracy Castle. I'm your conspiracy asshole, primetime 99, Alex Stein, on the ground all the time. Let's go! That's right, guys, we have a very special guest, James Perloff. He's a man, he is a great author, and he knows all about the New World Order and how the social engineers are trying to create a universe of pain and misery, literally, out of a George Orwell novel. So I just want to say, guys, with all that, James, welcome to the Conspiracy Castle. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. First time I've been on the show. Being on podcasts is not new for me, but this is the first time I've been on yours.
Yeah, well, I'm different. You know, James, I'm Primetime 99 Alex Stein. I'm like you, but I really do want to expose the New World Order because I'm the biggest victim of it. You know what I mean? It's like I grew up on the Happy Meals. I grew up on the glyphosate. I grew up on the predictive programming of Back to the Future. And so now I see a generation of, like, when I would read the school books and I'd be like, how did those people in World War II fall for propaganda? And now everybody is the victim of propaganda. It really makes me lose hope for society. So what I want to do is, in a tongue-in-cheek way, try to expose the same evil bastards that you are. So with all that, welcome to the Conspiracy Castle. Thank you for being my guest this Thursday afternoon, James.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Well, James, I wanted to bring you on because, you know, you're an author of many books, and then, you know, let's see, I guess, James, let me read them all out so you have them in order. The 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, and The Shadows of Power is a Rider. Those are the three correct books, James.
Well, there's Tornado in a Junkyard, and The Case Against Darwin, and one that I probably shouldn't say out loud, but this is my latest book.
It's C-19. I like that. So we'll talk about that. What we'll do is we'll do the first half of this interview on YouTube, and then, guys, we'll have a link to the Rockfin there. We can talk. It's actually a free speech platform where we can speak freely. We can say everything. So for the first, like, 30 minutes of the interview, we'll just talk. It'll kind of dance around. We'll just talk about YouTube-friendly stuff for the first half of the interview, and then we'll take the back half of the interview on Rockfin for the people watching on YouTube right now. Because I want to get into your new book. So before we get there, though, James, you know, as a person that's been, you know, able to see this for a while, like the New World Order, you look at what's going on now, I guess you call it a false flag attack. When did you realize 9/11 was a false flag attack, James?
Well, it took me at least a year. You know, when 9/11 happened, I was in the middle of a difficult situation. My mother had Alzheimer's. My family was under attack by a psychopath, and there's just a lot of things going on in my life. And when I had some really bad news the night before 9/11, and so when the news came on about it, I was kind of in a daze, and I didn't really think through the idea of a false flag, even though I'd written on false flags being arranged in my own writings.
Prior to 9/11, you had written about false flag attacks.
Well, I started writing for the New American in 1985, and I'd written on Pearl Harbor. In my books, I cover the Lusitania, the sinking of the Maine, Tonkin Gulf, etc.
And people always get mad. I cut people off. Everybody gets mad. But Pearl Harbor, did we trick Japanese to attack us? Because we had prior knowledge to the attack. I just had to cut you off there since you wrote about it. Is that true that we had prior knowledge that they were going to attack us?
Absolutely.
And that we brought them in to... Because... Well, why did we even bring... This is my question. Why is it we get attacked by Japan and Hawaii, and then we got to go save and beat the Nazis and help the Jews? It doesn't... You know, the story doesn't make a lot of sense to me, James.
Well, not only did we have prior knowledge of the attack through decoded naval and diplomatic intercepts, which the Japanese did not know we'd cracked their codes, but... President Roosevelt put the fleet in Pearl Harbor against all naval advice, and the fleet commander, J.O. Richardson, flew to Washington to protest. Putting the fleet there made no sense. It was vulnerable to surprise attack, which would not be in the usual berthing it had on the West Coast, but there are many other reasons he gave Roosevelt. Roosevelt responded by firing Richardson as fleet commander. The reason the Japanese attacked us is we had put strangling them with a trade embargo, which is joined by the Dutch and the British. They were dependent on imports for most of their oil and food and other many natural resources. And we told them they had to pull their troops out of China. What a lot of people don't know is the main reason that people were in China, their troops, was because Stalin had absorbed Outer Mongolia and the Chinese province of Xinjiang. The Japanese knew that communism would engulf China as it had the Soviet Union, which it did engulf China after the war. They could not pull their troops back as we demanded. And so we're basically given the choice. You can have death by communism or death by starvation. And the Japanese said, if you give us death versus death, if it's a two-headed coin, we're going to have to fight. And since Roosevelt gave him a very convenient target, he wanted the first blow to come to the other side. They did strike at Pearl Harbor, believing that that would give them time to strengthen themselves, form alliances in Asia, and defend against the encroachments that Roosevelt was presenting.
Well, it's funny you say that, because America is supposed to be the person that champions against communism, yet doesn't the New World Order, isn't the plan for communalism, for you will own nothing, you'll be happy, the Klaus Schwab? So what is it? Why? What's the idea that America is fighting communism, yet a shadow government within America wants communism? Explain that. That's kind of juxtaposition.
We never fought communism the way we did fascism. With World War II, it was the conditions given to Germany and Japan were unconditional surrender and no holds were barred. If you look at Vietnam, look at the rules of engagement. You couldn't engage an enemy fighter aircraft on the ground. You couldn't hit it on the ground. It had to be up in the air and showing hostile intent. Robert McNamara only allowed the Air Force to hit 6% of the targets it wanted to hit in Vietnam. Korea was similar. There was tremendous restraints put on the military. This was being used to forge alliances. The war against the Cold War was being used to forge alliances with Europe, because they wanted to get Atlantic Union going. They wanted NATO to be formed. They wanted CETO to be formed, which are stepping stones towards the New World Order. But they were never really serious about defeating communism. And that's one reason why the Vietnam War was dragged out for 11 years, if you go from the Tonkin Gulf to the end of the war in 75.
Yeah, so the Gulf of Tonkin was a false flag attack that brought us into the Vietnam War. So explain that, that being the original false flag attack in a way. Other than Hitler, would that be the original? Basically, I believe that the Nazis kind of didn't lose World War II. They basically just came to America. And, you look at Wernher von Braun, you look at a lot of the guys that did some bad stuff, they kind of got away. I believe Germany lost. I think almost, we got taken over by a lot of the people that were in charge there. But so where does that come into play? Like, who do you think is the driving force of the New World Order and using America as like a shadow government for that? Or do you blame Israel? Who do you blame, James?
Well, you mentioned Tonkin, question about Tonkin Gulf and a question about...
I kind of went off on a long tangent there. I apologize, James.
I think the leadership of the New World Order has been consistent. I do think there are very strong Zionist elements. The human face that is most prominent over the last couple of centuries has been the Rothschild family, but they've always had their Gentile underlings in the Rockefellers and the Morgans and the secrets, the Freemasons and the Skull and Bones and the Gentile secret societies that they needed to over they've used Freemasons and communists to overthrow governments so that they could set up either communist states or so-called democracies, which they would control. People would have the illusion they were electing the leaders, when in fact the leaders were already chosen for them through the control of the mass media, which wealth buys. So I think the leadership has been pretty consistent. I'll say this much, it's certainly Luciferian. All you have to do is look at Bohemian Grove, or you look at if you've seen the video interviews by Ronald Bernard, the Dutch banker who left the European banking system. He's a very high-ranking currency manipulator. He told his interviewers he's taken the Church of Satan in Europe and asked to help sacrifice children. So this is a Luciferian system. This is a good versus evil proposition, but a lot of people think it's just rich guys, because they do use money to get their way. I mean, that's how they buy people. That's how they buy politicians and news reporters. But money is not at the root of it. At the root, it's a very evil system. And you see that now with their depopulation program being inflicted on the world through.
Well, we can get on that in Rockfin. So let's go back to the SRA, the Satanic Ritualistic Abuse. What is that all about? I mean, why do these people need to do that when they say Hillary Clinton likes it? I mean, do they believe, in your opinion, do you think it's because it's an anti-aging thing, or is it just because they're so extreme that they can't they can't enjoy themselves without. I mean, why, what drives a person to basically want to do that to a child? I mean, it's really sick what drives some of these sickos.
It's about as evil as you could possibly get. Yeah, I have not made any in-depth study of Satanism, but I can say that that's certainly part of their program. I've heard that they believe they draw power from the death, when they kill someone, that they draw power from the death of that person's body or soul. And that apparently is part of it. And yeah, I've heard about the adenochrome, and that they think that this gives them a longer life. And of course, they want a long life because, or if not, to become humanly immortal, because they think that they'll escape the judgment of God if they never have to die. And so you're seeing people like John D. Rockefeller and David Rockefeller living to be 100. Henry Kissinger and Queen Elizabeth seem like they never.
Yeah, how is that? And Prince Philip. Prince Philip. I mean, how he lived to 99 or 100. I mean, the guy didn't. I mean, how. It looked like they were operating him with, Uncle Weekend of Bernie's. It felt like the last few years of his life, but they keep these people alive. So there is some, they do have access to some sort of fountain of youth, James. I mean, it seems like the Queen, like you said, is going to live forever. But it's really weird. I just don't understand the motivations of these people, because it's not money, and you know they have power. It gets like this really dark place. And I guess it's like the darkest thing you can imagine is like what these sickos actually do. And I know that's kind of vague, but it's really only so much you can say about it. Okay, so when we go, let's go back to the false flag attack. Sorry, the Gulf of Tonkin was like one of the original ones that got us into the Vietnam War. And then, you know, you look into 9/11 was a false flag attack that got us into a never-ending war in Afghanistan. So now looking back, this is 20 years later, and we're just now supposedly leaving Afghanistan, whatever that means. It obviously was a failed mission. How would you, when Bush did the mission accomplished, how would you rate the mission of our war of terror in Iraq and Afghanistan?
The idea behind 9/11, of course, was to instigate these wars, and, PNAC, the Project for New American Century, in its paper, Rebuilding America's Defenses, it called for a new Pearl Harbor. As they said, a new Pearl Harbor would be required. Now, I was writing a book on 9/11 before the big C hit last March in America. And I actually have over 900 pages of notes, and I'd written rough drafts of 16 chapters. And so I really wanted to get to the bottom of 9/11. We have so many controversial theories about the planes and the buildings. And I wanted to really, for myself, and hopefully for readers, narrow down exactly what happened on the day of 9/11 because of all that controversy. But there's no question about the fact that the purpose of the wars was the outcome that we got. You know, the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq, and then it became Libya and bombing Syria and providing Saudis weapons to bomb Yemen, and a complete involvement in the Middle East. They cost trillions of dollars that could have been spent at home, right? Rebuilding our infrastructure and, improving our healthcare system, et cetera.
Affordable loans, forgivable loans, think about it, all. They could have, college, I mean, they could have really actually used that money and helped the infrastructure of the United States, and it all went to waste.
Our freedoms are not being threatened by Syrians or Libyans or Iraqis or anything like that.
It never was. I mean, I hate to cut you off. I'm just saying our freedom was never, ever, ever once threatened. Have you and I ever been threatened by a terrorist on an American Airlines flight? Ever, James, ever?
No. Of course, we most of our freedoms were lost through actions of the government, as is continuing to this day. It's really the government that encroaches on our freedoms, not, people in caves over in the Middle East. But I did want to look into each aspect of 9/11. And it's actually the first show I've done in over a year. My memory is probably, I know it's would be foggy in certain details, but I welcome the opportunity to discuss it.
Well, 9/11, they say an animal that has more folds in its brain is smarter. There's a lot of folds in 9/11, like you go down one way. And so you can get a little hairy. So I believe that I'm, very knowledgeable about it. You mentioned the Project for a New American Century, and you look at one of the guys that signed that, one of the guys that was a bipartisan, game plan, and Joe Biden was all about it. He was one of the ringleaders on the Democratic side of that. So that was basically a plan to start the never-ending war in the seven biggest Middle Eastern threats to Israel in in Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, Libya, Syria, and which one am I leaving out? I forget. But basically, that was the plan. They did the attack, and now we're pulling out, and it just, to me, seems like such a waste. So let's go back to theories. I'm of the belief that when I look at Shanksville, Pennsylvania, Flight 93, there's no plane crash there. So I look at the Pentagon, there's no way a plane could have flown that low. So I, right then and there, those two places, I don't believe those two places were hit with the planes. Now the Twin Towers, that's different. I'm also of the belief that they had to have pre-planned explosives for those buildings to go down. So what is your theory, James, on what brought down the towers and what happened in 93 and what happened in the Pentagon?
Well, I do have some theories about that. You know, I mentioned to Mark Steves that I wanted to try and avoid the theories. You know, there's aside from the government explanation of what happened to the Twin Towers, it's three basic theories about it. One is directed energy, one is nuclear weapons, and one is nanothermite. And when it comes to the planes, there's several theories besides the government's. One is remote controlling the planes. One is drones being swapped out for the planes. One is there were no planes, but holograms came in shrouding perhaps missiles. And then there's the idea that CGI was added after the effect to make it look like planes had hit. And there are large followings of all of these theories about the buildings of planes. So I kind of like to avoid that today because it tends to trigger people when they do. But I wanted to talk about four areas of evidence that definitely prove that the government's story is incorrect, because the things that I think that everybody in the 9/11 movement can agree upon. Trying to get into those theories, would takes time to substantiate a view on that. So if you don't mind, I wanted to talk about four areas that show that the government's story was hokum.
Please.
And so I want to talk two things about the buildings and two things about the planes. One is, if you look at the Twin Towers, which allegedly collapsed. Now, according to the New York Times, the weight of the Twin Towers combined was over 1 million tons. That's a lot of weight. And physicists have estimated that there should have been 12 stories of rubble left over when the Twin Towers collapsed. But we didn't see that. When the smoke cleared, all you saw was some steel sticking up out of the ground and some rubble, but you certainly didn't see 12 stories. Now, there were 90,000 tons of concrete in the Twin Towers. That all turned to dust. There were 6 acres of marble. That turned to dust. In each tower, there were 47 upright, huge steel columns in the middle of each tower. They vanished. No furniture from the Twin Towers was ever found. No toilets were ever found. No phones were ever found. No computers were ever found. There were 10,000 metal filing cabinets in the Twin Towers. Only one was found. That was from the basement, and it was crumpled up like a piece of aluminum foil, and no bodies.
James, is that true? No toilets, nothing like that. I mean,
that's true.
Wow. Nothing,
all of it was turned to dust.
You had some passports. They found two passports, though.
Found passports. You know, paper seemed to survive. No phone survived, but some paper dialing pads for the phones survived. Also, I should mention that no bodies were found. Now, they did find bits of tissue or bone, which were some of were sampled for DNA and were linked to people who had been in the Twin Towers. But if you compare that to Florida with this recent condo collapse, right, they've been digging bodies out of the rubble, but nobody found any bodies in the Twin Towers. The only whole bodies they found were people who had jumped before the collapse or so-called collapse. And the one thing I want to mention about this, which is that if you watch the Twin Towers as they explode, there are pieces of, on the outside of the Twin Towers, they had these metal panels that were put in almost like Legos. And you can see them flying laterally. And they weighed several tons each. And yet, they were able to fly. They've been clocked at up to 70 miles an hour. Now, if it was a simple collapse, those metal panels would have simply come straight down. How do you get them flowing laterally at 70 miles an hour? Well, there's got to be explosive force. So the Twin Towers definitely exploded. They did not collapse. And regardless of which theory you ascribe to, whether it's nanothermite or directed energy or nuclear, the towers definitely exploded. And the government never went into this. They never went into these anomalies. And no building which collapsed ever had a situation where there were no bodies or no fixtures or other elements that they could find. So that's number one of four that I think are definites. And number two is one that people often start with. That's Building 7, the Salomon Brothers building, which housed the mayor's emergency management offices, as well as the New York branch of the CIA and the offices of the SEC. And that afternoon, it was a 47-story steel frame structure that collapsed in 6.6 seconds. And here's something that's interesting. Physicists have looked at that footage of Building 7 coming down into its own footprint, and they found that it increases in speed as it goes down. Now, if you know the laws of gravity, if you drop a ball from a tall place, it increases its speed as it goes down. So what that means is Building 7 collapsed at the speed of gravity. There was no resistance, and yet there were 81 upright steel columns supporting it. Now, in the early days, back around 2005, I remember that people who defended the official story said, well, the reason it collapsed was because it was hit by debris from the Twin Towers, and that damaged the columns. But if you think about it, the only columns that could have been damaged would have been in the front of the building, not in the back or the middle. So if the building collapsed from debris from the Twin Towers, it should have fallen forward, because asymmetrical damage does not cause a symmetrical collapse.
I think Building 7 is definitely the smoking gun, the way that fell.
Yeah, it's definitely a smoking gun for sure. Yeah. It came down, and the official government explanation eventually was that office fires made it collapse. But there were only office fires on 6 of the 47 floors. And there were fires, that's for sure. But that's not going to make a 47-story steel frame building have all 81 columns simultaneously give way. And as a matter of fact, I should mention, I know many of you listeners will know this, but in 2017, there was a study by engineers at the University of Alaska, Anchorage, which determined that office furnishing fires could not possibly have caused the collapse of Building 7. I should mention that the destruction of Building 7 and the explosion of the Twin Towers was well beyond the capabilities of Muhammad Atta and his cohorts of Al-Qaeda. So this definitely required help from very sophisticated services.
What about Muhammad Atta? My favorite thing about him is, you know, he was dating a stripper and had a big cocaine problem. And supposedly that's the airport that they trained at. That was supposedly a drug running airport.
Right.
So
that's covered by Daniel Hopsicker in his book, Welcome to Terrorland. And you're right. Muhammad Atta, and he was a psycho. That pink-haired stripper that he was dating, she dumped him. And so he went to her apartment and cut up her cat and its kittens into small pieces.
Multiple cats. Yeah, and I'm saying I have a cat right here, James. I'm saying I'm a cat lover. I have my cat sitting right here on the table. I love cats. It's just funny.
Yeah, I got a cat too. That
story makes me so sick. They went to her house and cut up her cats. Muhammad Atta. But that shows you he was too vain. He was not going to do a suicide bomb. They knew they weren't there training because they were going to be suicide pilots. I think that story is laughable. They were patsies.
Yeah. Another thing about Atta, as you mentioned, is he was a cocaine snorter. In fact, according to his girlfriend, he went on a 3-day drug orgy down in the Florida Keys, and he was a heavy drinker. He was heavily drinking a couple days before the 9/11 attacks. Another interesting thing that Hopsicker picks up on is he and El-Shehi, who was the alleged pilot of Flight 175, which hit the second Twin Tower, 2 days before the 9/11, they returned a rental car to the rental car agency, and they were arguing about who would pay the bill. They're both insisting that they themselves would pay the bill. Now, why are they arguing about who's going to pay the rental bill that's going to die 2 days later? And of course, you also know that Muhammad Atta is the only person on Flight 11 whose luggage didn't get on board and was left there for the FBI to find. Very conveniently, it had all the names of the hijackers, the complete plan, plus his will, which a Muslim has told me that it's not a real Islamic will, because he never mentions the Prophet Muhammad, and there are other inconsistencies. But why would he take his will on luggage that it's going to be burned up in the Twin Towers? That doesn't really make sense. What good would it do him? So it appears that his luggage was put there for the FBI to find so they could come out with the official narrative. And I should mention one more thing. If the Twin Towers were exploded, the plane hits had to be guaranteed up front. Now, the second plane, the one that hit the South Tower, Flight 170, United 175, if you know that's what is alleged, according to the FAA, was going at 586 miles per hour. Now, That's an incredible speed. The max operating speed for a 767 at ground level is 425. Now, that doesn't mean it can't go above 425, but the pilot's just told not to take it above that speed at that level because the air is thick. Once you're up in, you know, a few thousand feet in the air, then you can go at high speeds. But it hit at 586. And the day after 9/11, there was a chief pilot at an airline. His name was Dan Gavados. And, you know, all flights were grounded for the couple of days after 9/11. So he said to his
Except for the Bin Laden family were all flown out the same day.
Oh, yeah. And some Israelis, too, according to some reports. But
everybody else. Yeah, everybody else is grounded.
Dan Gavados said to his fellow pilots, hey, let's see if we can hit the Twin Towers on our simulators. So they went on a simulator, flight simulator, and he put 10 pilots on, and none of them could hit the Twin Towers. They all missed. And these guys were thousands of hours of experience of flying Boeings. And then Gavados finally did it. He hit the Twin Towers, but even Gavados couldn't get it up to 586 because the simulator would freeze up in the mid 400s because you're not supposed to fly a plane that fast. So the point being that if experienced pilots couldn't do it on a simulator, how does a hijacker who's never flown a Boeing in his life, they all made perfect strikes, the Pentagon, the Twin Towers, they got the planes completely into the towers. But if you think about it, these plane strikes had to be guaranteed in advance if the Twin Towers were going to be demolished. Because if El-Shehi, the pilot of the second plane, the one of the Twin Towers, suppose at 586 miles an hour, he just clipped the tower with his wing and he didn't completely penetrate the building, then they couldn't demolish the Twin Towers. And they would have, if there were explosives in that building, they have to go back in and retrieve them, which would be very difficult because it'd be very heightened security after an attack on the Twin Towers. So the Twin, you know, are you going to trust Muhammad Atta, a psychopath who snorts cocaine and drinks heavily to guarantee that he's going to make a perfect hit on 9/11? I don't think so. That doesn't really make a lot of sense if you're planning something like this at a very high intel level. So that's kind of reason number three, what's wrong with the official story. There's one more to go.
Yeah, but real quick, I just want to say, you know, the idea that those pilots you were talking about, it's the VMR, I think it's the velocity maximum rate of those planes. They can't test it going that fast at that low of altitude because supposedly, even though the plane may be able to go that fast, it could necessarily split like a banana because it's not supposed to go at, like you say, 586 miles per hour at that low of an altitude. Now, you know, if you're, you know, high up in the air, you're 40,000 feet, there, you know, there's less resistance and you can go that fast, no problem. But you can't test it that speed. So these pilots, that's why they you can't control it. The simulator is not going to be able to recreate that sort of pressure at that low of altitude at that speed because you can't even test it in real life. So that story, number three, is pretty obvious. So what's number four, James? I'm excited to hear number four.
Number four is the complete lack of response by the Air Force and NORAD. Now, I'm going to throw something at you that's even a lot of 9/11 people are not aware of. The man in charge of the Secret Service on 9/11 was named Nelson Garabito, and he gave an interview to the mainstream media, in which you can still see on YouTube over a year ago when I was writing my book, and I haven't looked to see if it's still there. But he very distinctly said that we knew we had two planes, hijacked planes, coming into Washington. One was 30 minutes out, and one was 45 minutes out. Now, the reference to 30 minutes out is a reference to Flight 77, alleged to hit the Pentagon. And the one 45 minutes out would be Flight 93. Now, the 9/11 Commission interviewed, his name was Van Steenbergen. Terry Van Steenbergen. He was in charge of Washington airspace for the FAA. When they interviewed him, he said that he was in touch with Nelson Garabito on 9/11. He said that Garabito told him, we have two hijacked planes coming into Washington. One is 30 minutes out, one is 45 minutes out. So that's confirmation that Washington knew two planes were headed in. Now, the question is, why were no fighters deployed? Zero fighters were deployed to intercept. Now, Andrews Air Force Base is just 10 miles from the Pentagon. And on its mission statement, it said that it was always combat ready. And in fact, the flight the man in charge of flights at Andrews, Major Daniel Kane, called the Secret Service and said, do you need our help? They said, no, we don't need your help. So Washington knows, and I'm sure you've heard the testimony of Norman Mineta, that the transportation secretary was in the bunker with Dick Cheney that day. And here's what he said. I'm the exact quote. Quote, there was a young man who had come in and said to the vice president, the plane is 50 miles out, the plane is 30 miles out. When it got down to the plane is 10 miles out, the young man also said to the vice president, do the orders still stand? And the vice president turned and whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary? And that, end quote. Now, there's always been controversy. Was the order to intercept or not to intercept? But there were no planes deployed. So apparently it was not an order to intercept. It was not until after the Pentagon explosion that the orders went to Andrews Air Force Base. Now you can begin deploying. But at that point, it was too late. So you've got a clip there. It was too late. And Flight 93 had crashed in Pennsylvania, or allegedly crashed there. So those interceptors from Andrews were not able to do anything anyway. But, you know, a standard protocol always, if a plane was out of control, you automatically notify the military. Standard procedure, air traffic controllers have confirmed this. And on 9/11, three things happened to all four planes. They veered radically off course. All contact was lost by the air traffic controllers with the cockpit, and they turned off their transponders, except for Flight 175, which turned it off and then turned it back on with their own code. Kind of a clever move.
Let's hear Norman Mineta. Let's hear what he says.
Here's Norman Mineta. Yeah. Well, thank you for bringing this up. I didn't know you had it.
During the time that the airplane coming in to the Pentagon, there was a young man who would come in and say to the vice president, the plane is 50 miles out. The plane is 30 miles out. And when it got down to the plane is 10 miles out, the young man also said to the vice president, do the orders still stand? And the vice president turned and whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary?
And so that basically, you know, it blows your whole story up. They had the ability to scramble jets and stop these planes. I mean, what else could that be in reference to? Do the order still stand? And you can tell by the way Norman Mineta describes it that the military person was confused or felt, you know, something was off. Like, why aren't we stopping this? And that Dick Cheney had to be stern and had to kick him in his derriere to shut him up, you know, to kind of wake him up to show this is the plan.
Tracked down that young man, by the way, and of course he's been silent about what was happening that day. But again, no fighters deployed until after the Pentagon explosion. And I should mention, for balance, there were three fighters deployed earlier from Langley Air Force Base, but they were sent over the Atlantic away from Washington. They were not sent in response to 77 and 93, or the situation that Mineta and Cheney and the young man are talking about, or that Garibito was talking about. They were sent out over the Atlantic because it was a false report that Flight 11 was still airborne and heading south. And on the 9/11 Commission report, page 26, they say they cannot determine where this report came from. I have a hard time believing that. If you asked enough people in the chain of command where that information came from, they should have been able to find out. They say they can't determine where it came from. But I have a feeling, this is just a conjecture on my part, that 9/11 was to a degree a computer crime. And I believe that if you look at companies like PTEC, which the government went out of its way to protect afterwards and was providing software for the FAA and the Air Force and so many other government agencies, that they had the capacity to put false radar reads on the screens and make people think there were planes where there weren't. That's a conjecture on my part. It's a guess, but I think it's a kind of a reasonable, educated guess as to why the Air Force was faked out and sent those planes over the Atlantic away from Washington, where they should have been defending the Capitol.
Real quick, James, I don't think that's conjecture at all, because they were running drills on the same day. So it would make sense that if you're running a drill, you would need some sort of technology so that it would appear that the thing's going real, you know? So, I mean, to say that there's some sort of technology that can make a radar, a thing appear on a radar, I think that's not far-fetched at all. I think that's pretty. I think you'd need that technology in order to run a drill. So we know that they have that technology.
Yeah, there's a lot of drills, as you know, taking place that day. And our Air Force was kind of depleted that day because they had planes up in Canada, in Alaska, and overseas on other drills and taking place. Actually, Webster Tarpley's got a book out on 9/11 where he talked about 46 drills that were either taking place that day or near to that day that were distracting the Air Force. So we were at minimal levels, but we did have the capacity definitely to launch aircraft against what they said was coming in.
And I believe they had a triangulation of Air Force bases, I believe, something like that. I mean, they had multiple Air Force bases in multiple states that I think could be there in under like 20 minutes.
Oh,
so,
sure.
Yeah. So the idea that we couldn't have stopped this beforehand is absolutely absurd. But, you know, what are you going to do? They like to tinkle on us and tell us it's raining. That's kind of like the government's MO, and we're never going to get the official story. But those are, in your opinion, the four glaring biggest issues on the official narrative of 9/11.
Well, those are four that I feel that are very definite and that are almost indisputable.
And so for me, I want to
focus on this. Some stuff is speculative, and I've written articles on 9/11 that have probably contained too much speculation. I've been criticized for that. But I've put a disclaimer at the top of those articles saying that this is speculation. But, you know, you have to kind of tink around with different theories. Sometimes, Thomas Edison didn't get the light bulb right the first time. He had tried about 1,000 times. So, but when I wrote this book, I decided that I really want to focus on the hardest evidence and stay away from speculation as much as possible and really narrow it down with critical thinking, logic, and facts. And I've been working with, not only was it that I get every book I could read on 9/11, everything from, Joseph P. Farrell to Judy Wood to David Ray Griffin. I also, the last thing I had been reading before this last PSYOP hit was the 9/11 Commission report. I didn't want to criticize the 9/11 Commission report if I hadn't read it. I think I better read everything there is on 9/11, including the architects and engineers for 9/11 truth and everything that's up there on the web before I write this book. I want to make sure that I have it factually correct. And I was also working with a very talented group on 9/11, included former air traffic controller, former Boeing pilot, former Boeing engineer, radar expert, engineers. It was a real good group, and we were having constant discussion on 9/11. But I don't think we've had any discussion since this last big PSYOP hit America in March of last year. We've not been talking about 9/11, which is a disappointment. But frankly, what's going on now is a bigger priority than 9/11. It's sort of superseded it in what's threatening our liberties at this very moment. They're not looking at the terror angle. They're looking at another mechanism to take away our freedom at this
point. Well, speaking of that, so even though we have 136 people watching, they're going to be so mad, but I want to be able to talk about this stuff without getting a strike for medical misinformation. So I just want to say to the people watching on YouTube, guys, the link, it's not behind a paywall, but James and I, we got to talk about the adult subject for the next, we've already been on here for 38 minutes. So the next 30 minutes, we're going to click the link. It's literally in the description below, and we just want to say everything the CDC says is correct, and that we love you, Anthony Fauci, and that Anthony Fauci is the smartest person, and that Joe Biden has the best president ever. He's the most popular president, and that we love you, and that he's the best commander in chief, and that if Hunter Biden's art is available, I'd like to purchase as much as possible, and I'll purchase it anonymously. So guys, I can't even say anonymously. If you guys want to see the rest of the interview, and the link is in the description, because like I said, we can only talk about so much stuff. So I know I hate to see all 140 of y'all go, but we love y'all. We just, YouTube is too crazy. Okay. Bye guys. Link is in the description. It's not behind a paywall. You can't complain. I'm not charging you for it. Oh, and we'll stay live on DLive. So go to DLive if you don't want to watch it on Rockfin. So there are, or Twitter, you can go to my Twitter and you guys can watch this without watching on Rockfin, but we have to say goodbye to YouTube. See you, YouTube. I hate to do that. That's where our biggest audience is, but we still have other people watching us, James. But it's such a bummer not being able to speak about this stuff on YouTube, because I've gotten two strikes. Like, it's been 90 days since I've got my last strikes, but I just don't want to. I want to just kiss YouTube's butt because they don't want me to be on there, right? So I think it's important that I stay on there, like a mold or like a virus. So that's why I'm just placating to their rules, because they don't want me to be on there. Does that make sense? That motivates me to stay on there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just got over a 1-week suspension on Twitter, and that's two strikes on me on Twitter. So I made a meme of myself saying, "Well, my suspension's over. The bad boy is back. Look out, Twitter. I've got some really badass tweets here." And then my tweet is, I'm reading from a book about woodchucks and what their habitat is.
Here, I have the tweet right here. I have the tweet. Here okay. it is. There you go. Right. And then let me make it a little smaller. Isn't that crazy that they censor you on Twitter? Like, can you imagine this, James? I mean, it doesn't even make sense. Like, you're some sort of evil person. They literally allow pornography on Twitter. Like, literally, you can see as much porn as you want. But if you talk about medical misinformation or anything, well, my 1 week Twitter suspension is finally over. So get ready, Twitter. This bad boy is back with cutting edge, badass, kick ass tweets. I love it. The woodchuck is a rodent belonging to the group of squirrels known as marmots. Adult measures from 42 to 62 centimeters. It is found in low elevation forests, pastures, and hedge grows. Look at you. The bad boy of Twitter is back, ladies and gentlemen. So go give him a follow, James Perloff. It's at James Perloff. And, it is in the description below. Oh, look, you tweeted that. I got to retweet you. But is the link is in the description to your Twitter. So let me go to my profile. We'll see. We're live right here. I'm going to tag you on it. So we'll get going if you guys want to follow James. Okay, so James, tell me about your new book, COVID-19. I know it's obviously the biggest psyop. It's kind of like you said, nobody wants to talk about 9/11. Everybody's talking about freaking COVID. Why would you even waste your time talking about 9/11 when we're under the biggest false flag attack possible with the coronavirus? So what do you think? What is your book about? Give us the synopsis, James, and so the people that want to purchase it.
Okay, so we're off YouTube now, right? So
yes, you can say whatever you want. Yes, yes. Okay. Coronavirus is you know, a psyop. Yes, go ahead.
Right. Sure, it is. And like I said, I was looking at a book on 9/11, and then when March the 13th, Friday the 13th of last year, when Trump announced the national lockdown, I wrote a blog post about by the way, I'm a risk nurse for 45 years. I retired in 2019, just before COVID hit. But I was a registered nurse in Massachusetts for 45 years. I immediately knew that you don't quarantine healthy people. We've never done that before. I said, this is BS. This is imposition on our liberties. The governor of our state is deciding who can work and who can't. All of a sudden we can't have jury trials because it violates social distancing and freedom of speech, right to assemble. All of our rights under the Constitution are suddenly being abolished, even though the Constitution is supreme law of the land. So I wrote this blog post, which kept getting longer and longer. And then I said, I got to make this into a book. So I wrote it, I made it into this book, COVID-19 and the Agenda to Come Red-Pilled. And it sold 3,500 copies on Amazon over the course of less than 2 months. And it was rated 92% five-star and 8% four-star. And nobody gave it less than 4 stars. But Amazon banned it. And I was anticipating that. So I'd already ordered a separate printing of my own, because I'm used to being a publisher. And 4 days after they banned it, the truck rolled in with my copies. And so I just switched hats and I hired a distributor. And Amazon had been distributed to places like Barnes & Noble and Books A Million, but I hired a new distributor. When they saw the sales on Amazon, they just picked it up right away. And so it got right back into Barnes & Noble and also European marketplaces through places like the UK Depository. You can get it in Canada through Indigo, et cetera. And so I started doing a lot of podcasts on that, but I also had to create a new website. I changed jamesperloff.com to jamesperloff.net because my website was under attack. I found that people were contacting me on the website and the messages weren't getting through to me. And Facebook was totally blocking. You couldn't even mention my website on Facebook Messenger without the message being blocked. So I know some high-tech people overseas who got me new servers and a new website. The book is now in its third printing since the Amazon ban, and it's only banned at Amazon. You get it anyplace else, any other bookstore has got it, and you can order in bulk from me. And I also give people there's an ebook version, which was about to launch in Amazon when they banned it. But since I couldn't put it on Amazon Kindle, I made the ebook available for free. It's too important to charge money for. So it's available for free when you subscribe, or just write me on my contact form on my website, jamesperloff.net, and I will send you an ebook for free. Whatever version you prefer, Mobi, EPUB, or PDF. And it the book has almost 300 endnotes. Everything is documented. You can click on the endnote. It'll take you right to the source.
That's very magnanimous of you to give you the free ebook like that. Wow, James, that's very awesome.
I thought about it. You know, I said it's going to take me time to get it onto a platform. And actually, the people have thanked me for making it free because they've lost their jobs. And they said they never couldn't even afford an ebook if I charged 10 bucks or something. But a lot of people have sent donations to my website anyway, and it doesn't matter. The important thing is to stop this horrible psyop. You know, we're all gonna, what's the point of winning a pot on a poker pot on the Titanic on the night that it sinks? I mean,
that's a good, James, that's really good. Okay, real quick, but what do you think coronavirus is? So let me tell you what my opinion is. I believe, you know, they rebranded the flu and they're using these PCR tests that can test you positive for anything if they run it for 40 cycles. So that there's probably that, you know, the normal amount of people that get SARS, sudden acute respiratory syndrome, and MERS, you know, is about the same that we get every year, and that they just mislabeled a bunch of people that died of heart disease or diabetes because of these bad tests. And so now I believe it's a Hegelian dialectic. They want to sell vaccines the whole time. So problem, reaction, solution. You know, they had to create a virus to create a, you know, people to get scared, to scare them into getting basically a vaccine that they're eventually going to make mandatory. So that's my stance. Now I want to hear yours. What do you think coronavirus is?
Well, I have five major sections in my book. The first is on the lockdowns, because at least theoretical. I do have a section on various theories about 5G, and it's got a chapter on the mainstream theory, and a chapter on the bioweapon theory, a chapter on the 5G theory. I also include Andrew Kaufman's exosome theory, Dr. Stephanie Seneff of MIT, Dr. Zach Bush. They all have, Seneff talks about airborne glyphosate, for example. So I wanted to include all the theories because I wasn't so sure. You know, what I tend to lean to is that we may be dealing with a bioweapon, but I do have a section on fake news and how they have, in the ways that you've already mentioned, amplified this thing. They have taken, you know, in Italy, they said that 8 to 10% of the people were dying from COVID. Well, it turns out that the Bloomberg carried the story that actually 99% of the so-called COVID deaths were people who had comorbidities, people who were elderly, they had advanced cancer, advanced pneumonia, advanced lung disease, advanced
James,
diabetes.
James, the average age of a coronavirus death is 81 years old. The average age for all-cause morbidity is 78. If people realize you live 3 years longer if you were to die of the coronavirus versus all other ways to die, you live longer if you die. I mean, people are too stupid. They don't even realize how good of a stat. People should be celebrating, you know. Oh, I died of coronavirus. That means I lived to 81. You beat us by 3 years. You beat the average. So, you know, you're above average, but people are too stupid. Sorry to cut you off. It just bugs me, these obvious things. Yeah. That are just so, people are too, it's literally idiocracy, James. People are literally almost autists, barely functioning autists at this point, James.
Yeah. The CDC itself last year acknowledged that the survival rate for all ages combined was 99.74%. But the actual survival rate is higher because CDC was using these conflated diseases. And anybody who happened to test positive on a PCR test, if they died of cancer, was counted by the CDC as a COVID death. So even their 99.74% survival rate is too low. For somebody who's between ages of 20 to 49, between according to the CDC itself, has above a 99.95% chance of surviving. So why do you need a warp speed vaccine? Why should workers be getting vaccinated? Your survival rate is so high for COVID. In the book and to this day, I don't deny that COVID exists. I have been in contact with people who had COVID. There is a distinct syndrome. There are a lot of people with flu who are labeled as COVID falsely, but there are distinctions with COVID. COVID has a dry cough, whereas the flu is a wet cough, and there is a low zinc level, I believe, associated with it. I knew a woman who had COVID. She's a red pilled registered nurse like me. And she's a big activist down south. But she said that with COVID, she had absolutely no sense of smell. And while I was on the phone with her, she'd opened the can. Her husband said, "Don't you smell that foul smell?" She couldn't smell it. I mean, there's a distinct syndrome that goes with actual COVID cases. And I knew a red pill doctor, and she's totally red pilled. I mean, and she's a brilliant MD, was working in one of Massachusetts. She was working in one of Boston's hospitals. They did have a COVID unit. She said they did have COVID cases. For sure. But she had no doubt that COVID was a psyop being run on people. So I think there are some genuine cases of COVID, but I think if anything, it's a bioweapon. But I leave the door open to, you know, people like Andrew Kaufman, Stephanie Seneff, Zach Bush, and others who have different theories regarding what it may be. But to be sure, the number of cases has been grossly inflated. Here in New England, they get 5,000 new COVID cases. Well, what they're talking about is 5,000 positive PCR tests. They're not talking about people who are dying, hospitalized, sick, or even have symptoms. In fact, at Pine Street Inn, which is a homeless shelter in Boston, which is near where I live, they had 146 people reported positive for COVID. But guess what? None of them had any symptoms. And these are homeless people. You'd think they'd be very vulnerable to getting sick, but not one of these 146 people who tested positive had any symptoms. So I think COVID is real, but they have really played up the numbers, for the purpose of getting Bill Gates' population control vaccine program underway with this mass-produced, inadequately tested, and now we're finding increasingly lethal blood clots. I have an associate who passed away recently. I called up his office and I said, can I speak to him? They said, well, he's unavailable. And I said, well, when will he be available? They said, well, who are you? And I said, I'm one of your clients. And they said, well, sorry to tell you, he passed away from a heart attack 2 days ago. And I said, did he get the COVID vaccine? Yeah, he got it about 2 weeks before the heart attack. And he had just 52. He had no history of heart problems in his family. And I got a call from a church I used to attend. They said, please pray for two of our family members. They're from the same family. They're in critical condition after getting the COVID vaccine. And there's so many like that. I have another friend who had a cousin die in her 20s after getting the COVID vaccine, but this is not being covered by the mainstream. So I think that there was worse, definitely real COVID cases. I have Christian friends in Uganda tell me that COVID is hitting there right now. One of their pastors died from COVID, with classic COVID symptoms. So I think that it exists, and they're kind of spreading with this military bioweapon or whatever it is around to keep it going. But again, as you've said, and as I've said, it's been grossly exaggerated through many fake news and stories in the media.
Well, I do know that there are viral respiratory illnesses that go around. I had a friend in college that got SARS and almost died. I mean, it was on a ventilator. This is in 2009. It was so scary. I'm saying this is a serious respiratory. It's out of nowhere. So people that think that respiratory illnesses are fake, I mean, I don't think people think that, but there is some sort of virus going around. But like I said, the numbers are greatly, grossly... Yeah.
Absolutely.
They're just using the numbers to lie in order to make you all take a vaccine. When I look at the vaccine and I look at the kids that are taking, now they got it approved for 12 years old to 15 years old, yet one 12-year-old supposedly has even died of coronavirus, like in the United States. What is going on, James? How is it these parents are so brainwashed? I mean, how are people so stupid to give your kid an experimental vaccine? And they've had all these kids get hurt, and the mainstream media won't cover it. And I know it's like we're obviousville as truthers, we know, but will the bubble ever burst, or will these idiots ever figure out that they're killing their kids by giving them an experimental vaccine, James?
Well, when it does happen to you, if you've seen the movie Vaxxed by Del Bigtree,
great movie.
Who have been had vaccine injuries are they're convinced. They see their children go into autism shortly after the MMR shot, for example. And, I was affected by vaccines myself in my youth. I didn't even know it was the vaccines causing it. And I saw, as a registered nurse, I saw some really strange vaccine policies being implemented. And I said, I got to look at this. But it wasn't until, about maybe 15 years ago, I started to really wake up to the vaccine injuries.
James, I had to say this. In high school, I got a vaccine and I got mono, and I made out with my girlfriend the whole time and she didn't get mono. So I didn't have mono. They just couldn't diagnose me what I had because my lymph nodes were all swollen. They just said I had mono, but I didn't have it. So the vaccine injury, I got injured by one too. Sorry. It's just, what was my mind?
No, I used to have a purple welt, this bigger than a grape on the side of my neck. And I asked my mother, Mom, where did that come from? She said, oh, it's when you got your vaccine when you were a kid. Well, my immune system had walled it off and it was there for years. But then I went through a detox program in the early 1980s and that welt just went away. These things are very dangerous. As as of the 1986 Vaccine Injury Act, you cannot sue a vaccine manufacturer. They're the only people who get a free pass. If your car manufacturer manufactures a car with faulty brakes and it causes death, you can sue them. But vaccine manufacturers can cause death and injury. There is no liability whatsoever. And if you can prove that a vaccine caused your injury, you have to go to vaccine court and you get compensated by your fellow taxpayers, not by big pharma. So this is really a great tragedy. And they're taking it to the nth degree now with what's going on with COVID. It's so sick to watch it. And you know, it's up to us apparently in alt media, because the mainstream will never cover it. As you know, there's just five corporations that are controlling almost all of mainstream media now. You've got GE, which is NBC Universal, and you've got CBS Viacom. They were separate, but they merged about a year ago, CBS and Viacom. And you've got Disney, and you've got News Corp, and you've got Time Warner, and that's it. And if you listen to the news here in New England, no matter what you're listening to, you go to New England Cable Network News, that's GE, NBC Universal, right? If you listen to WBZ, which is our biggest news station, that's CBS Viacom. You open up the newspaper, the Boston Herald, that's owned by News Corp. You can't get away from the big five. See, you've got to, you know, people have got to turn off their televisions and get away from the mainstream media. It's their only chance they've got. But as you know, there's a huge campaign. We were talking about it before during our 9/11 segment about YouTube censorship. And, you know, I was on a show with Spiros Skouras.
Spiros the man. Spiros a fan of the show. I love Spiros. Yeah. He's the man.
We were doing a show on COVID. When he posted it, in less than an hour, it was deleted by YouTube. And I was on a show just the other day with a young man. We did a show. We're talking about the New World Order. We just happened to touch on COVID, but he sent me, Jim, it's up on YouTube. By the time I checked it that morning, it was already gone from YouTube. I mean, they're striking the stuff as fast.
Hopefully
as
we should be okay, because I said I love CDC and I love Anthony Fauci and that he's all right. Yeah. Maybe might be lucky.
Hey, I love Joe Biden.
Okay. But here, but watch this clip. Look at this. This is what they're saying in I believe this is either New Zealand.
I saw this,
Look at this woman. This is insane.
Up to date.
It's basically, real quick, just a quick synopsis for the people that are watching this. She's saying that the government is the only source of the truth.
We'll share with you the most up-to-date information daily. You can trust us as a source of that information. You can also trust the Director General of Health and the Ministry of Health. For that information, do feel free to visit at any time to clarify any rumour you may hear, covid19.govt.nz. Otherwise, dismiss anything else. We will continue to be your single source of truth. We will provide information frequently. Be your single source of truth. With anything else, we will continue to be your single source of truth.
Single source of truth. I mean, that is literally George Orwell's 1984 or Brave New World.
Truth. Yeah, the mystery of truth. Yeah.
We will be your only source of truth. Nobody else has the truth except for us. So we are the truth purveyors. And that's what's going on now in America. I mean, they hide it and they say, oh, they talk about it on the Today Show, or they, you know, they dumb it down to you. They give it to you on The View or The Talk or the radio station. But it doesn't matter, because the five conglomerates control the narrative. So it doesn't matter how they, what kind of sugar they give you to give you your blue pill. But they give you your blue pill no matter what, because they control the truth. So it's really sad. How do we break people away from that, James? How do we wake people up? Because you've been awake since the 80s, late 80s. And most people, I mean, I woke up in 2016 from Hillary and Trump, kind of. You know, it's how the hell, I mean, and I'm still late, you know, but I'm farther ahead than most of these bozos, with all due respect. How do we change the landscape of the mainstream media not controlling this false narrative that's ruining all of our lives and dividing us?
Yeah. Just to amplify on trust the government, which this New Zealand Prime Minister was saying. And you probably saw a couple of weeks ago, Matt Hancock, who was the British health minister, was caught pawing and smooching his married aide, and Hancock himself was married. Now, this is the health minister telling everybody to lock down and wear a mask and socially distance, observing no social distancing and no mask with his own aide, who was carrying on an affair with. And of course, the same thing happened with Neil Ferguson, Dr. Lockdown, Professor Lockdown, who gave the computer models, the fake computer models for COVID deaths, which were exaggerated by a factor of 131. He was carrying on an affair with a married woman, violating his own lockdown rules as well in Britain. So you see that these health ministers, and same thing at the G7 meeting, they're all hobnobbing with no mask or social distancing. So it's rules for thee, but not for me. But as far as how we fight this, it's been the same battle for decades now, that we have a controlled media owned by the super rich. And this goes back for decades in America, but it's been getting more and more consolidated and more and more hard for even the mainstream to occasionally slip a story through that goes against the narrative. So it's up to us, and they're censoring us more than ever. So we have to keep fighting harder than ever. But I hope that one of my hopes is that logic and common sense will appeal to people. You know, like I said, with the 9/11 or with COVID, the government keeps saying things that don't make sense. I mean, they say we have to vaccinate the young, but the young don't get COVID. And in fact, I have an article that I linked to from my updates page for my book on my website from the Daily Mail in the UK, which points out that based on all scientific information, there's not a single case documented, empirical case, of a child passing on COVID to an adult. Since children don't pass on COVID and so they don't get COVID, why the heck are we vaccinating the young? It makes no sense. The statements made by Fauci make no sense. They're illogical. I see you've got the Matt Hancock here groping his aide.
And so this is the guy that's shutting down the UK right here. We talk about these are our leaders. It says no. And this is at the height of the pandemic. There's no, it's social distancing. You can't go out. And this is the, and that is literally the rules. I mean, they don't have to follow them. And it's really sad. Right. That we just let these people get away with it too. I mean, we put up Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Not that anybody actually likes, and I don't think anybody's stupid enough to actually like Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, but I'm saying we put up these leaders that don't care about us whatsoever. Right. And it's sick. It's disgusting. It's like, why do we take Anthony Fauci's word for anything? And luckily we're smart enough not to do it. But these people now that even with the lifting the mask mandates, James, and they're still wearing the mask, what kind of sickness is that? Those people are so brainwashed. I don't think they can. Their egg's too scrambled. Or when the toothpaste gets out of the toothpaste thing, you can't put it back. I think those people are too brainwashed. I don't think you can ever unbrainwash them, sadly.
I hope that that's not the case. But you're right. I live in Massachusetts again, and our governor, Charlie Baker, lifted the all the COVID restrictions on May the 29th. So I went to a grocery store a week later, and I just did a quick survey of who was still wearing a mask, even though you didn't have to. It was 85%. I estimated about 85% was still wearing a mask. And then 2 weeks after that, I went in, it was about 2/3 was still wearing masks. Even though you didn't have to wear masks, they were still wearing them. Because I guess they've been subject to so much fear porn about the virus that they think that, and even though a mask does not protect you, Fauci said that in his private emails. He said it before. Early in the pandemic, said that a mask would not protect you, would just give you a little psychological comfort. And
I believe the mask can actually hurt you. I believe that you need to breathe freely. Because if there is a virus going around, a virologist, you need 12 layers of protection with oxygen. You know, that's the only real way to get to protect yourself from a viral infection. Breathing your own oxygen in and out. That is when it goes back to, James, the satanic ritualistic abuse. We are literally in an initiation ritual into the New World Order, just like they do in, Eyes Wide Shut parties, like how they wear the mask. This is the mask. So now the people, when they say, oh, we lift the rules, you don't have to wear the mask anymore, the people that are still wearing the mask are the ones that are still under the spell and that are the ones that are still under the ritual initiation into the forever New World Order.
Right. You're very right. This is a Luciferian oligarchy plan. that is running the governments. And you're quite right about the mask. They definitely increase your carbon dioxide levels and they reduce your oxygen levels. And they're not meant to be. You know, I occasionally wore a mask as a registered nurse. We went to a room that had somebody who was considered highly infectious, taking care of wounds who were vulnerable to infection, but we didn't wear them all day. But now healthcare workers have to wear them all day. And they're also mandating the jab for healthcare workers. I have to wonder if there's going to be healthcare workers around to take care of anyone within a year or so. I don't know. I think nobody really knows the full implications of these vaccines. There's so many unknown ingredients. We're starting to see more and more doctors coming out with more and more information.
But say that again. You think a year? You think the timeline? You think it could be that fast that it's going to be affected within a year?
I don't know. I hope not. I hope not. But we're seeing these blood clotting issues in people, and the fact that these spike proteins are going past the blood brain barrier. We've seen people with neurological disorders, really severe reactions, and we know also that the VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, it's vastly underreported, the events that follow vaccine injury.
And they say it's overreported. They say VAERS. The vaccine people say VAERS is overreported. That's how big of liars they are.
No.
Yeah. It's way underreported.
Afraid to be stigmatized. Yeah. The doctor's afraid to be stigmatized if they report anything against the vaccines. And of course, hospitals are getting rewarded with extra money for or COVID admissions or COVID on a death certificate. I'm sure you've seen some of the interviews with Dr. Scott Jensen, MD and former state legislator, or maybe the current state legislator from Minnesota. You're talking about how the CDC has encouraged people, doctors, to put COVID on death certificates. Just by, you can just assume, they said the CDC, it's okay to assume that the patient had COVID. And Dr. Jensen was outraged. She says that death certificates are supposed to concentrate on exactness and specificity. There are legal issues involved with death certificates. You can't just assume what somebody died of. But, oh, we've seen so many rules broken.
James, a guy in Orlando fell off a motorcycle at the beginning of this, and they put COVID as his death because they said he was sick, and that's what the guy got caught. He got caught lying about it, and the guy said, oh, well, he was sick, and that's why he crashed a motorcycle, and that's why. I mean, these people are insane. If you don't think there's kickbacks, it goes back to the vaccine. So this is how the kickback, this is, and they talk about it in Vax. They even said if you don't give the MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine all at once, the occurrence of autism is like 0% if you do it individually, but they still recommend it to do it together, and the occurrence goes way up. So what happens is these doctors, how these vaccine companies are, is they base it off the percentage of patients that actually get the vaccine. So that's how they get their bonus. So it's, you know, the more times they put COVID, it's the same thing. Percentage of people that die, that's how. So that's why they want everyone counts. Everyone puts up their percentage a little bit, and then that gives them a better trip to Cabo. It gives them a 2-week vacation to Cabo. It gives them a free whatever. You know, these doctors are doing this for really pennies on the dollar. The motivation is really not that big a deal from these pharmaceutical reps that are ruining our lives. And you look at our system, it costs $200 for the same amount of insulin in Chicago that it costs $2 in Cancun, Mexico. What the fuck? It doesn't make any sense. Our system is so screwed up. It's really sad that we're all victims of it.
Yeah, sometimes I'd like to go back in a time machine to an earlier day. I'd kind of like to go back to when I was a kid in the 1950s.
When you go back? When did you go back? That last question, James, we'll wrap things up because we're almost at an hour and 10 minutes. And then if you could go in a time machine, when was the last time? Because the New World Order, I was listening to an interview with Aldous Huxley. It was 1958. My dad was 3 years old. And Aldous Huxley, he's talking about all the stuff that's going on now. He's literally talking about how there's very few people in the media that control it. He's talking about how all the politicians are fake. He's talking about everything that, you know, all the government control. So there's people hip to this in 1958. So even though you weren't hip to it, is that it? Is that the best time of our lives when we were blue-pilled and we thought the world was still a happy place? Is that our last happy moment, James?
Well, the 1950s was still blue-pilled. However, from 1953 to 1963, there were no wars. We were prospering as a nation, and we were an ethical nation. There were common values and, you know, things like transgenderism and other weirdnesses that have come up in more recent years did not exist back then.
A man is competing in the female side of the Olympics this year, James.
Yeah,
what in the world?
So sick. It's so sick. And
I'm rooting for Laurel. I hope Laurel wins. I mean, I think you have to root for him, right? Or do you not root for Laurel? You want Laurel to finish in last place? Then that makes you a bigot, James. That makes you a bigot. You have to root for the transgender, or you're anti-trans.
I've talked to a doctor who's seen young girls in the hospital who have had their breasts removed and their ovaries because they were told that they really wanted to be a boy. It's so sick. It's so
James,
sad.
The last time I'll cut you off, I just did a whole thing about puberty blockers. They actually talk about these puberty blockers that are irreversible, and they prescribe them like they are reversible. They're ruining kids' lives.
They're destroying
a kid's life. I read a story about a kid got on it when he was 13 on puberty blockers, and at 17, he got on it at like 12, and he decided to stop at 17. 5 years later, he still had a penis of a 12-year-old, and his penis never grew any bigger. And he said it was embarrassing. Yeah, I mean, that's just disgusting to give a kid something that make his, literally all it does is make your genitals not grow and give you estrogen. There's no physical benefit, and it kills your bone density. So they're literally killing children, James, for this transgender movement.
Yeah, it's sick. Our country is a very sick nation. Uncle Sam is in big trouble, and all people making memes of the Statue of Liberty sitting there just kind of giving up and smoking a cigarette. Just give up on America, you know. So we're in bad shape, but we have to keep fighting for what's right. I know that's what God wants us to do, speak the truth. And I'm glad that there are red pill people like you out there. It's, you know, I have friends who are red pill. Without them, I'd probably have trouble maintaining myself, you know, on a stable level, just because you need the reinforcement, the comfort of other people who share your views and have not gone insane along with the rest of the blue pill world that just is going down into this vortex.
Yeah, you can really get in a rabbit hole and get in a dark place. But hey, that brings to the last point I want to make. You talk about the creator God. I think there's no doubt that when you actually look at their big plan, they're trying to hide the existence of the creator. They tell us that we evolved from pawns. They literally make you want to feel like you're just insignificant, because that is the part of their management skills, James. So it's really just a sad world that they're trying to hide, that God exists. And that's this godless world that we live in. And it's I think that's why... what's causing a lot of our issues here today.
Yeah, I wrote a book in 1999 called Tornado in a Junkyard. It's a heavily documented book that debunks Darwin's theory of evolution, because, you know, Darwin's theory was something that helped turn me into an atheist when I was in the sixth grade. And life was downhill for me for a long time, until I finally found God and found that God was real and found that Darwin's theory was a house of cards. That's why I wrote a book.
I was the same way. I was like, hey, we evolved from pond scum, the primordial soup. I believed. I was like, listen, these people figured it out, dude. I was an amoeba, abiogenesis. I was all about it. And I always kind of believed in God. But at the same time, like you, I saw these scientists that I thought were so smart saying that, you know. But then you look, there's no transitional species. The idea that, you know, that we're just a cosmic accident, James, that for me is like that, like, The tornado in the junkyard is a perfect thing. And this is what the atheists will say. They're saying, well, it's not the same. It's not the same. But literally, it is the same. Everything, this airplane, this 737, 777, it took was a billion years, billions of years, and that's how it got here. It doesn't make any sense. It's an impossibility. So that's a really big point, that when you don't have any, you know, joy, you don't have any gusto for life, and you think that you're a cosmic accident, that is when you're in that constant fight or flight. And you're so easy to be controlled and managed. And it's really sad. That's why we got to help people wake up. And you guys pick your own God. I'm not saying one God's better than the other. I'm just saying there is a creator. There is something to this. It's not, I don't want to push any sort of doctrine on anybody, but there's something more to this than meets the eye, in my opinion, James.
For sure.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Okay, James, tell them where they can find you before you go, and tell them where to buy the book.
Okay, Alex. The book is available from my website or Barnes & Noble or Books A Million or any place except Amazon. And my website is jamesperloff.net. I'm on Twitter, at least for the time being.
Just James off a Perloff. Week's suspension, just out of Twitter jail. So you're on Twitter parole.
Twitter
Look at you, a hardened Twitter criminal. Look at you, James. It's like Shawshank Redemption, the Twitter version.
Yeah. So that's kind of it. And I have several books out. All my other books are still on Amazon, including Truth is a Lonely Warrior, which is a primer on the New World Order, which I wrote in 2013, and a companion book called 13 Pieces of the Jigsaw, which came out in 2019 before the COVID pandemic. And I'm very fortunate, I might be able to get my 9/11 book out, but there's still a ways to go in that.
Well, you're going to get it done. I want to read it. I want to buy it. I'll be the first person that buys it. Well, James, you crush it. Hopefully we'll talk again very shortly, because, you know, there's always new stuff, maybe around 9/11 in September. I'll talk to you again.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Thanks.
Sounds good. Thank you. Thank you, guys.